Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Animation Podcast, a weekly podcast about all things animation brought to you by Filmbook. My name is Matt Brunet, but some of you may know me as Animat from my YouTube channel, Electric Dragon 505, home of web series that are all about animation, including Animation Lookback and Animat's Reviews. If this is your first time here in the Animation Podcast, the title will go in and explain everything for you. Now, this is an animation podcast, right? Right, okay, so you got the idea. But specifically, though, it talks about the latest news that happened this week. So, for starters, we will be looking into the process of animation in the new movie Storks, specifically on how they animated the Wolfpack. Then we will be looking into the teaser trailer of Smurfs, The Lost Village. Then we will be taking a moment to honor the life of C. Martin Crocker. Then afterwards, we will be looking into a little update regarding how the story will flow into the live-action adaptation of Death Note. And finally, we will end things off with Matt's Pick of the Week. If you want to check out more episodes of the Animation Podcast, then head on down to Filmbook, that is filmbatchbook.com, with the Animation Podcast in the subject line, or just by searching it, actually. The subject line actually is in the email. If you want to go, send us that at podcast@filmbook.com. That's where you have to put in the Animation Podcast as the subject line. But enough about that now. Let's take a look upon the new animated feature that was released this week's Storks. And I gotta say, with Storks, I was pleasantly surprised about it. I actually managed to get an advanced screening for it, and honestly, it turned out a lot better than I would expect. The trailers didn't really bring in a lot of promise, but, you know, not the best animated film I've seen, but it definitely was a fun watch. It gave me a lot of good laughs, it gave me some great entertainment, and I had a lot of fun watching it, so at the very least, it did serve its purpose. But specifically, however, I'm sure that for many who have watched this film, a lot of characters... have definitely stolen the show, and it's not necessarily the storks themselves, or Tulip, or any of the other ones. Now, when I mean a big group, they're all consist into one, and I'm talking, of course, about the Wolf Pack, a group of 100 wolves that just fell in love with the baby and would stop to no end to try to take it from Junior and Tulip, because that baby stole all of their hearts. Not to mention that, like, they're basically some of the best characters in the movie. Highly memorable, great performance by Key and Peele, and well-crafted animation brought to you by Sony Pictures Imageworks, which is kind of ironic that Sony Pictures Imageworks would actually work on this film, which was distributed and thought up by Warner Animation Group. But regardless of that, what I would like to talk to you today is regarding a special Cartoon Brew article that was actually quite fascinating, and it gets into a little bit of the behind the scenes of probably the most interesting aspect in the movie in terms of the visuals, and that is regarding the wolf pack when they would transform. Like I said before, the wolves would stop to no end to try to get that baby from Junior and Tulip. And some of the ways that they do it is actually by transforming themselves into something useful. First off, and this is actually something that you can go and check online, you can watch it for free, they have it available as a separate clip, where the wolves will get together, and they will turn themselves into a suspension bridge, and then afterwards they would turn themselves into a boat, and then afterwards into a submarine, and then a plane, and then a minivan. So they would transform into all these different shapes, and it's actually very fascinating, very creative. Some might wonder how the fridge were they able to take all these wolves and just turn it into all these useful items, because this is no easy task. Because ultimately, the goal is supposed to be you gotta make something like a submarine or a bridge or a boat or anything like that. But you have to also show that they are all made of wolves. So it's trying to combine these two elements, not to mention seeing the transformation as well. So let me get back into this Cartoon Brew article written by Ian Fales. By the way, this is not like this is fails like F-A-I-L-E-S, not like hashtag fail or whatever. It actually describes very well about how the process began. Now, the first step, apparently, is to try to figure out the key elements. Of course, there is the silhouette of making the shape of the object in like they desire. The best example I'm going to take for this one in particular is going to be the submarine one, because apparently that was the most complex that they had to do. So first off, they got to think about the silhouette of the submarine, what kind of shape that they want to go and achieve. But also at the same time, they got to figure out which wolves are going to be individually placed in there, and also the timing of the transformation itself. How are all these wolves going to come together and form themselves into a submarine? Well, at Sony Pictures Imageworks, it's actually very simple. The first step is, like, take all those elements that I said about the placing of the wolves, the timing of the transformation, and also the silhouette. They have to do that in 2D animation. So that's kind of like the blueprints on how to figure that out together. Basically, just to see an idea of how they can work with by using 2D animation to see that as an initial blueprint. And then they actually created a new software. This was developed by Alan Camillo and also Melt van der Spuy. They formed together to create this unique little software. And let me just take a little quote here. Hold on a sec. Where can I start? Ah, yeah. So Imageworks animator Alan Camillo and also Melt van der... Melt van der Spuy. Devise a special tool set to give artists flexibility in producing wolf configuration. The process began by hand drawing the configuration of the wolves would get into and using that established possible poses. The idea here was that the size, shape, and silhouette of the configuration of the configured had to be immediately evident. Camillo's tool then allowed animators to work with scores of wolves at a time and pose them into this very unique shape that needed to form and then animate them. So basically, this tool allowed the animators to make the wolves a lot more flexible. It's not just rigged to move realistically like a wolf. This actually allowed them to be a lot to pretty much use squash and stretch to the max to have the desired pose of when each individual wolf would form together into this submarine, like how a lot of the noses would be squished or how their paws would like kind of be tucked into them in order to just have like a simple shape to be a part of this huge submarine or anything else. But sometimes there are a few exceptions where they would take an extra step. Of course, the first transformation that we see is actually the suspension bridge, and often what we would end up watching is kind of like the formation. Sometimes we would get up close, like we would see two wolves, they would bite each, you know, they would bite each other's jaws in order to become like a part of the bridge. And then afterwards, we would see like this big Jean-Claude Van Damme wolf being on top, and like it would just like we would see them fall down and try to capture like a part of the cave. So that's pretty much the whole transformation that they try to figure out. So of course, the first step, they need to go and put in the 2D animation, kind of like the blueprint, figuring out all the elements from the timing of how the wolves will get together, the shapes that they would transform into, and how they would look into the final product, and then also the shape of the silhouette itself, what it's meant to look like. And then we would get this extra little tool. With that tool, what they would do is that the animators would be capable of taking all these wolves, and they would then come together to form this the shape itself. So at least they would do it all at the same time. So they won't have to animate the wolves individually. Like, one would be this little part. If they all work together as the same part, they can all work that together. Hopefully I do get that right and I'm not just making up a few fibs. But that's basically the idea of what they were trying to do with it. Let me just take an additional quote here. They then move as a unit that can that had to have its own global squishiness. We're talking about hundreds of characters all squished up in unison together and pressed up against each other. And I don't think I've seen that anywhere else before. And that's actually another good example. That's actually another layer. The whole thing that I was talking about is just regarding the transformation itself. I forgot to even get into the process of when they are in their final form and they would have to move. Now, of course, you don't really see that with the bridge itself, but you do when they would turn into a vehicle like a submarine, a minivan, or a boat or something like that. You also have to add that little element of animation of seeing whatever that needs to be done in order to animate the vehicle itself to move. And sometimes they could think of many creative situations, like you would see a wolf turn into a wheel in the minivan, and like there's additional dialogues like ow 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 ow. There's a lot of creative ideas that they did think of, and definitely overall this is just a great highlight in terms of Storks. A very creative, great idea overall. It's just a lot of fun to check out, and I think it's easy to say that the wolf transformations overall, they are a great they're probably the biggest highlight of this film in terms of the visuals. And often when it comes to a good animated film that people will remember, there's often that one little scene of animation that definitely does stand out. Like, a great example I could think of, for me, when I would think of Zootopia, like, a memorable visual aspect would be when Judy would enter into Zootopia, and we would first enter into the big city, looking at the different areas. That was a great, wonderful visual highlight. Another one that I could think of, Kubo and the Two Strings, that's just, like, an entire list of them, but many of the great action scenes, many of the great transformations, but probably the one that I could think of that definitely does stand out would probably have to be the scene when Kubo and his friends have to go and fight against the giant red skeleton, because the size that you see, it's legit that size. It is absolutely gigantic, so much so that even at the end, you're actually given a special little Easter egg of seeing the animators working with that giant red skeleton. That's another great animation moment. And I guess with Storks, what we got is going to be the wolf transformation scenes. They're a lot of fun to watch, definitely fantastic. And it just adds another layer to the characters of the wolves, seeing what they can do when working together as a pack. And it's definitely a lot of fun. And like one of the animators stated in this article, they definitely, like, it's no, like, it's probably not been done in any other animated feature. We've never seen anything like it, at least not in a computer animated feature. Not in the levels like this. Maybe that it has been done before, but never in a comedic level. Something that is done to be probably something that would pose a threat to the main characters, but also done as a comedic effect. That has never been done before, and that's probably a nice little highlight in terms of the animation. So I can definitely see there's going to be an Annie nomination coming into the Stork's future because of this. Definitely fantastic. A lot of fun to watch. And honestly, with all that said, there are some components I would be rather interested to look deeper into. Like, I would love to see what they have done in terms of the 2D animation. Like, how have they done it in terms of hand-drawn doing the wolf transformation scenes? That must be a lot, like, that must be fantastic to check out, because more often nowadays, I am starting to see more hand-drawn animation examples of what they want to do as a test to adapt a character into 2D animation. Recently, I've seen this happen with Kubo and the Two Strings, when they did it with Kubo's mother and the old lady. And I actually saw another recent example with I forgot his name, but the monkey pirate played by Peter Dinklage in Ice Age Collision Course. And that was actually some phenomenal animation right there. So, you know, that would be something great to check out. Like, I would love, like, that would actually make a fantastic bonus feature for, you know, that would make a fantastic bonus feature for Storks. I would love to see if they can actually put up some of the 2D animation to show the wolf transformation scenes. In fact, like, just speaking about all this, I would actually love to see that as, like, just how they animate the wolf pack as a bonus feature in itself for the upcoming Blu-ray. That would be fantastic. That would actually make the Blu-ray worth it for people who would want to be interested in getting Storks on Blu-ray, if they really do love it that much. But overall, I have to say, I gotta give massive kudos to the people at Sony Pictures Imageworks for doing such a phenomenal job. Especially with the wolf pack. It's just definitely well animated. And definitely thanks for the laughs, for what you guys gave me for the wolf pack. Just definitely awesome. Would love to see more of that. And speaking of Sony, our next story, we are going to be jumping into Sony Pictures Animation. And as you guys may remember, for 2017, that is going to be the year in which the company is going to play all of their cards in order to reboot their brand of Sony Pictures Animation. That is going to be the year. Not only are they going to be releasing 3 animated features with Smurfs, the Emoji Movie, and The Star, but also they will be releasing a direct-to-DVD animated feature with Surf's Up 2, and also they will release 2 TV shows with the Cloudy series and the Hotel Transylvania series. So how are they going to perform overall? Will it be a big, will it save Sony Pictures Animation, or will it potentially kill them? We'll just have to wait and see. My bet is probably on the latter. But Sony has officially revealed this week a little taste of what's going to be going on with one of their first big steps into rebooting the Sony Pictures Animation brand. And I'm talking, of course, about the reboot of Smurfs, The Lost Village, which previously it was called Get Smurfy. And honestly, I'm actually really glad and really happy for Sony for changing that title, because that was absolutely stupid. Let's be honest, guys. Like, what the fridge are they going to do with that title? Like, are they going to put in a brand new song like, "Time to get Smurfy, put down your pants and panties, poop on the floor, time to get Smurfy"? Like, seriously, that's just absolutely stupid. But yeah, Smurfs The Lost Village, definitely a much more appealing title. A title that doesn't just sound absolutely stupid, you know? Definitely. So at least I'll give kudos to them. But now they have released a brand new trailer of Smurfs The Lost Village, which is going to show us our first little taste of how the animation is. So basically, this is our first ever look seeing the movie come to life. And I'll be honest, guys, from what I see, you know, it's not bad. You know, I'm actually kind of impressed. For one thing, I'll definitely tell you this. Even though we only got the trailer itself, it was 30 seconds. That's it. This is not even considered a sample of what could be to come. But already, from what I can gather, the 30 minutes I got here is definitely much more entertaining than I got with the previous Smurf films. Because let's be honest, those Smurf movies, they suck, and they sucked so bad. In fact, I've already done a review of the first Smurf movie with Joey Tedesco. You could go check it out now on his channel at Cartoon Palooza. But yeah, it was a terrible, terrible movie. But then again, at the same time, watching this trailer, this is even more enjoyable than I did with many of the other recent Sony Pictures animation films. Like, in terms of the animation itself, I'm actually very surprised to see, they definitely toned down in terms of the cartoony animation. You could still see there is a bit of that, especially when I think it was Brainy Smurf that ended up getting eaten by that flower. So there is a bit of that cartoony flair, but it's not as much. And that was the biggest problem with Sony Pictures Animation for a long time, especially with the Hotel Transylvania films and the Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs films. They, they try to emphasize on the cartooniness way too much, down to the point that it makes the movie almost unwatchable, especially with the Cloudy films. It is just absolutely unbearable, and especially with these poorly made designs. We're talking about the levels of Norm of the North right here. But in Smurfs, it definitely shows they definitely toned it down. And with the designs themselves, they look so much better than they used to be. Like, the thing is with the Smurfs in the first two films, like, honestly, they looked fine. But it's the kind of design, like, okay, they look okay at first, but the more you stare at them, the more creepier they looked. And with here, they stayed a lot true. They stayed much more accurately to the Peo design. They decided to skip out the realistic flair into it. And yeah, it actually looks great. It looks fine. And honestly, I think what does help this is actually because of the director, Kelly Asbury. Now, the thing is with Kelly Asbury is that he definitely had a lot of experience beforehand. You might know Kelly Asbury as one of the directors of Shrek 2, and he would later direct, Romeo and Juliet. So you could tell this man has had experience with working on computer animated features. That is something that I could say much more than the other films like Hotel Transylvania and Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs. Their strategy is to bring in directors with absolutely no experience in working on a computer animated feature, let alone just working on an animated feature in general distributed by a big company. And that's the thing, and that's pretty much what I see in Smurfs. This one, you could tell it's done by people with experience. With the other ones, they don't. And that's how they ended up with a poor product. And that's just visually itself. Don't even get me started in the writing quality. So, overall, this is just, but again, I just want to mention, however, this is just a little taste. This is just a little 30-second trailer. But I do have one criticism with it, though. One thing that just seems off, and, like, it's just another side of Sony being stupid. Let's be honest, guys. What the fridge is with that rap number there? It's like, get back, don't know me like that, get back, you don't know me like that. It's like, that is just so out of place, honestly. It's like, that musical number there, it has no purpose to be in a trailer for Smurfs the Lost Village. It just, I don't know, it just sends off the wrong message, and honestly, it makes no sense. It makes as much sense as playing the Whip Nene onto the Trolls teaser trailer, you know? It's like, that thing was just out of place. But other than that, I definitely enjoyed what I got with Smurfs the Lost, with the little teaser trailer that I got here. Now, this, of course, this is absolutely not enough to determine if what we're going to get is a good, if we're going to get a good movie or not. This barely tells us anything. This would barely even be considered a teaser trailer. But from what I see, there could be a chance that what we're going to get with this might end up similarly with the cartoony animated features that we got this year. At best, I can see this be equally as good as something like the Angry Birds movie, or Storks, or Sausage Party, or even The Secret Life of Pets. Somewhere around in that category where, on av- On average, critics are going to give it like maybe a 6 out of 10 or 7 out of 10, somewhere in that level. Or at the worst, well, I don't see it to be like Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs terrible, but it's going to be in the veins of like Hotel Transylvania, where it's going to be in the writing that really does suffer. But already, I can tell in this movie, the animation is far superior than what it is in Hotel Transylvania. So, at the very least, I'll give it that. But, hands down, but as for the comparison to Smurfs, yeah, I could definitely tell this is going to be a lot better than what we received with Smurfs and Smurfs 2. And it's going to be hard to pretty much imagine if this movie is going to be in the same quality as either of those Smurf movies. Like, somehow Raja Gosnell just came in and is going to haunt the quality of this film. But we'll just have to wait and see on April 2017 on how good the Smurfs, Smurfs The Lost Village actually is. Now, sadly, for our next story, we are going to be taking a moment to mourn the passing of someone who has definitely touched a lot of hearts of teenagers and young adults alike. This is actually a pretty, you know, this is a news that actually broke out last week, and it was very unfortunate, I must say. It really was. Chances are you might have seen something done by this guy, but of course I am talking about C. Martin Croker. Unfortunately, he has passed away at the age of 54 last Sunday. I don't think it has been confirmed on what specifically he has died yet. But for those of you who don't know who C. Martin Croker is, he is one of the people responsible for shaping up Adult Swim for what it is today. He was known to be an animator for shows like Space Ghost Coast to Coast and Aqua Teen Hunger Force. So his style of animation is mostly incorporating flash animation and using old recycled animated characters, like taking like an old TV show like Hanna-Barbera Space Ghost and turn him into a talk show host, or even designing new characters like a talking French fry, milkshake, and meatball, and just bringing them to life in suburban New Jersey, living next to some deadbeat neighbor named Carl. But at the same time, even though he has done a lot of animation works, he is also a double threat. Not only is he an animator, but he is also a voice actor. The one thing that people recognize him the most is actually being the voice of both Moltar and Zorak in Space Ghost Coast to Coast. And simultaneously, in Aqua Teen Hunger Force, he was the voice of Dr. Weird and his assistant Steve. And if I may take a moment to talk about my experience with the works of C. Martin Croker, the thing is, even though he is more, like, his most recognizable work, of course, is Space Ghost Coast to Coast, but for me personally, I was more introduced to him is somewhere in the mid-2000s, where I recognize his work. I've honestly never seen an episode of Space Ghost Coast to Coast, but I've seen many of his other stuff. I remember I used to binge watch the Aqua Teen Hunger Force. And even though that really was a stupid movie, it definitely was a lot of fun to watch. It was hilarious seeing the dumb shenanigans that Shake, Meatwad, and Frylock they would get into, and how they would also end up screwing over Carl. But one that I probably recognize the most, and this would probably coincide the most with C. Martin Croker's talents, is the Brack Show, actually. One of the spin-offs to Space Ghost Coast to Coast, along with Cartoon Planet. I think I remember watching Cartoon Planet as well, but I don't really remember it as much as the Brack Show. That show was absolutely hilarious, and I remember this is where I was introduced to C. Martin Croker's performance as the cynical and very bitter Zorak, and it's just a lot of fun to watch, and seeing the dynamic and the contrast of personalities when you got like the pet, like the, like I said, the cynical and bitter Zorak and the happy-go-lucky Brack. I absolutely adored Brack, and honestly, it has been so long since I've seen that show, and I even remember some lines. I just feel sad, like, honestly. Like, just hearing this news, it does make me feel as sad as Brack saying goodbye to Mr. Buck-Buck-Cock. No! Mr. Buck-Buck-Cock! Oh my god. Great times, honestly. Great times. And that's probably what I should do to honor C. Martin Croker, is to relive that show that I haven't seen probably for a decade or even more than that. But yeah, that's pretty much how I was introduced to the works of C. Martin Croker, is because of Aqua Teen Hunger Force and the Brack Show. And as I previously stated, this is one of the people responsible for really shaping up how Adult Swim is today. As you guys may know, this Flash animation style would carry on to many other shows. It's not just limited to the spinoffs of Space Ghost Coast to Coast, but also Harvey Birdman, Attorney at Law, Squid Billies. If I may look into his credits, actually, I would also like to mention how he is one of the he's also one of the animators in charge of working on the Aqua Teen Hunger Force call a movie film for theaters, and that is actually something that I've watched recently for a review. Some of the other stuff that he has done, if I may take a look, actually let me go into the animation department here. He didn't work on sorry about that, but I meant in terms of the animation. Like, he has worked on shows like Aqua Teen Hunger Force and also Space Ghost Coast to Coast. And apparently, like, he was even a director in many of the Space Ghost episodes. On top of that, let me see if there are any other credits that he has done. But in terms of a voice actor, he has also done some other stuff like, Sunday Pants, Number One Dad. He also did Perfect Hair Forever. Oh, wait a minute. He was also it was a show that apparently even Zorak appeared in. What a coincidence. He also did Invasion of the Killer Cicadas, I think. Yeah, okay, yeah, a short. And he also did the Xmas Files, and he did a voice of a reindeer. But yeah, it's going to be very unfortunate, but we'll definitely thank the guy for a lot of the great work that he has done. Rather it be through Space Ghost or with Aqua Teen Hunger Force, he has definitely left an impact in terms of how teenage or adult animated television would go, and we'll definitely miss him. Okay, so for our next story, let's line up a little bit with Death Note. Actually, that sounds very contradicting. I don't know how I can line up. Like, we're talking about the death of someone, and now we're going to be talking about the death of many inside Death Note. And what is actually very interesting is that just recently, in an interview with Collider, there is a guy named Jeremy Slater. He was originally going to be the writer of the live-action American film adaptation that will be released onto Netflix of Death Note. He was, as I stated, he was supposed to be the writer, but then he decided to leave the project so that he can be the writer onto the television series of Exorcist. And I just want to keep you guys informed that this guy is relatively new in the business. One of his first works is actually the 2015 Fantastic Four movie. And I'm sure this would probably turn off some of you guys, but let's just wait and see. Maybe that one is just a case of bad luck and really bad executive decisions. So maybe it's not necessarily entirely his fault for the destruction of that film. But, like I said before, he was in an interview with Collider, and he has given us a little bit of information of how Death Note could actually go. He remembers that in his early draft of the script, He mentioned, going into my source here at Anime News Network, he described the film as the 1995 Michael Mann film Heat, except with teenagers. And one of those teenagers has superpowers. He added that the script is attempting to stay close to the moral complexity of the manga. So that might give us a little bit of a clue of what could be expected onto this American adaptation of Death Note, that we'll be looking more into the morality of Death Note. And that is something that both the manga and the TV show actually really does look into. And I would say, especially with the TV show, the one thing that I've noticed that is a major difference between the manga and the anime series is that it really does look... What I was about to say is that in the anime, it actually really does dive deep into the mind of Light Yagami and his thinking process on like what he would do in this position, who he wants to kill, how does he want to stay in power, and all that kind of stuff. So we really dive deep into the mind. And that's what the series really does try to emphasize, and it looks like it could translate simultaneously onto this adaptation. Would this be a good thing? Would this be a bad thing? I don't know, but honestly, in that sense, it would all depend on the execution. What works on the anime is that we look deep into the mindset of Light Yagami while he's trying to do his actions. So pretty much he's describing his situation, but simultaneously we're seeing like how he's pretty much thinking into this whole process. So I would say that the way that it works in there is that it's not really about exposition. That's not the whole point of the thinking process. It's more to enter the psychology of Light Yagami, to enter into his morality. So we're mostly entering the mind of Light. That's how it works in there. How it's going to be adapted in here, I am not 100% sure. But for those of you major Death Note fans, just in case, I would recommend doing your homework and try to check out the 1995 Michael Mann film Heat. Maybe that will give you a bit of an idea of how it could work. Personally, I have not seen Heat myself, but we'll see if this would actually work out. But like, it could be a good first step. But again, this is all about the execution. But I would like to mention, however, in the article here on Anime News Network, it also adds that the film director Adam Wingard, recently elaborated on the film with Collider, noting the film's level of violence, describing it's kind of a nasty and crazy film. But at the same time, I do have to admit that it is kind of weird, because I've seen in a previous article that they try to really do emphasize on trying to make it an R rating, because they really don't want to push back on like the swearing, the violence, and the nudity. And I was honestly confused when they mentioned that, because okay, I understand the violence, because like you got to see a lot of the deaths and how Light Yagami works in action, and the swearing, I guess I understand it. I don't really remember. I barely even remember any swearing in the anime itself. But the one thing that really does confuse me, why nudity? Where, like, that I don't remember at all. Do we really need nudity in something like Death Note? Was there actually someone who watched Death Note and thought to himself, you know what this is missing? We need to see more of Misa Misa's titties. Honestly, I have no clue. But yeah, like I said before, this is going to be all in the execution. And rather if the approach of Heat is going to be a good idea or not, that we'll just have to wait and see. And so far, we don't have a specific release date, but all we know is that this will be premiering on Netflix in 2017. And so finally, we got Matt's Pick of the Week. And let me be honest, with this story, this is just something that I've stumbled upon, and I looked deep into it, I was like, what? And, like, I went deeper down the rabbit hole and looked at it, I was like, holy crap, this is actually pretty crazy. And what I am talking about, of course, is going to be regarding Moana, the upcoming Disney animated feature that is actually highly anticipated. We haven't had a Disney-style animated film in a long time since 2013 with Frozen, but already it seems to be in controversy. Not necessarily the movie itself, but because of a Halloween costume. Now, when I say that, I'm sure a lot of you are thinking, oh, is it because Moana's costume is considered a little too sexy for girls or something like that? Actually, no. It's not really Moana herself. Moana is fine. It's actually regarding the guy next to Moana, Maui. That is where the problem lays. And apparently, the controversy that happened is that there is this Maui costume that they decided to sell. And this Maui costume in particular, what they did with it was that it's basically a full body Maui costume. But instead of just, instead of having everything be Maui, imagine, like, there's no head, there's no hands, and there's no feet. That's basically the whole costume. You got the brown skin that's entirely covered with tattoos. You got, like attached to it. Well, it's not, like, an accessory, but it's, like, on the costume itself. You got the necklace with all the different teeth. And you also got the frilly leaf skirt. So that's pretty much the whole costume in general. However, this costume angered a lot of people. They saw this and they aren't taking it. Many people ended up being so mad at it that it seems a bit insulting to actually legit wear brown skin for Halloween. And going into my source here on Variety, they have actually fished out some tweets that actually mentioned this, and they got... They weren't necessarily happy with it, saying, as a Polynesian, by the way, I support our folk involved in Moana, but this, no, our brown skin slash inks, not a costume. And so, basically, you can understand how there are a lot of Polynesian people that got mad about this, but at the same time, you also got a lot of white people mad about it as well, because... Let's face it, white people just need to find something to be offended for, even though it's just none of their business. Like, they just want to be on the side, like, we want to be offended too. And everybody else is like, shut up, white people! You're probably the one who is responsible for this anyways! No, but yeah, basically this is just to say that a lot of people got so mad about it. What ended up happening was that Disney actually did pull the costume out of it. By the way, let me just give you a little bit of a description of what this costume is supposed to be. Your little one will set off on adventures in this Maui costume featuring the demigod's signature tattoos, rope necklace, and island-style skirt, plus padded arms and legs for mighty stature. A matching black wig was also on sale. And at the same time, they also featured this little kid actually wearing the costume. And thank freaking God, Disney actually did pick a darker skinned kid to wear the costume, because having a white kid wear that wouldn't necessarily be the brightest idea. But yeah, this is just to say that Disney actually did take away that costume and actually release an apology. The team behind Moana has taken great care and respect to the culture of the Pacific Island that inspired the film, and we regret that the Maui costume has offended some. We sincerely apologize and are pulling the costume from our website and stores. However, this is just for the Maui costume alone. For those of you who want to go and get the Moana costume, that apparently is still available. But with that said, honestly, this is one of those cases that the more I think about it, the more I realize, Yeah, this is actually a pretty bad idea. And I have to wonder, what did the people at Disney Products were thinking when they were making it? Because the entire idea is that you're legit wearing brown skin. And, like, even though, yeah, it is covered with tattoos, it's still not hiding the fact that you're wearing another race as a suit. It just doesn't make sense. And honestly, it shouldn't be that surprising that something stupid like this would happen in Halloween. Because I can imagine there are some people that would take this costume and they might take a step further. Because like I said before, the costume itself only covers the body. It doesn't cover anything like the hands, the feet, and the head. I can totally imagine that there could be some white kids or some white people. They're going to go and take it a step further and they'll actually get some brown paint and try to paint their faces brown and like their hands and feet as well. And so they'll end up walking around with brown face trying to dress up as Maui, thinking that it's okay because they're dressed up like a freaking Disney character. It makes no... Oh my god, it's just... Oh boy! They did not think this one further. I am convinced. I'm sure that Disney did not have any bad intentions whatsoever. But they so did not think this one through. And by the way, I'm not going to blame Walt Disney Animation Studios for this. Anybody involved with the feature is not responsible for this costume whatsoever. It's the people at Disney Products. They're the ones who thought up of that idea. They're the ones who thought up of all the different merchandising and stuff like that. And somehow they think this is a good idea. Oh boy, not really. You really dropped the ball on that one, guys. Better luck next time. Try to think of a better idea for a Maui costume. Or actually, just don't. Like, just give them the skirt, just give them the wig and the skirt, and they'll cover the rest. Just, like, give them a black marker and do the tattoos yourself. And the thing is that I'm sure some of you are listening to me thinking that, well, Matt, isn't there human decency involved with this? Like, people aren't going to be that stupid to literally go brown face as an excuse to dress up as Maui. Oh, guys, for Halloween, you have no idea how many times people think that they can get away with some of the stupidest crap. You just have no idea. The worst thing is that the notion that I mentioned about Maui and going brown face, that's kind of tame compared to others. As long as it's topical and they think it'll get people a good laugh, they'll get away with anything. I kid you not, I am sure this is going to happen on several occasions this year, that people are gonna go and buy themselves a gorilla suit, a gorilla suit, fill it up with bullet holes, and go around saying that they're gonna dress up as Harambe. Tasteless, yes, but they're not gonna care. They think it's gonna be funny. Oh, and by the way, considering that it's Halloween, and we are during a presidential year, this is gonna be the year of the U.S. presidential elections. Take a shot every time you're gonna see someone dressed up as either Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton. It's gonna happen. But this is all to say that Halloween is the time of year that people think that they can get away with by being dressed up as the most ludicrous and ridiculous thing that they never would on any other day. Like, even cosplayers have the right mindset to not even do that. Like, you're not gonna see cosplayers walking around dressed up like anime characters and go full on Asian face. They don't do that. Now, the thing is, with Halloween, however, like, they often just do this for fun. Like, they don't do it as a profession like cosplayers. That's why they would end up being dressed up like some of the most racist things. Like, even to this day, you will find costumes where people will stupidly dress up, like, either in brown face or black face, or they'll even go full-on Ching Chong Asian. And that, you know, that's kind of the biggest issue. And, again, I'm not gonna blame Disney for this. Well, okay, no, I'm not gonna blame Disney for purposely doing this. I'm sure they have good intentions and they just want to go and have their kids dressed up like the characters from the upcoming feature, whether it be with Moana or Maui. But yeah, they did not think that one further. You're just going to make stupid people be even more stupid and be a lot more insensitive. So I am still, like, regardless, I'm still excited for Moana. This will not change my point of view on how the animated feature will be. But yeah, this is just, overall, like, I just wanted to report this because this is just Disney making an oopsie. They're not a perfect company, and often they'll just pull something stupid like this. So, I'm going to congratulate Disney taking the right initiative to take away the costume, apologizing to the Polynesian people for accidentally being a bit insensitive. And, you know, the funny thing is that even though the Polynesian people are not happy with this, they're still excited for Moana. So at least there is that. So they're still showing, they're still going to go and support the movie nonetheless. But I'm glad that Disney took the right initiative. But yeah, Disney just pulled an oopsie with this one. And it's a good thing too, because at least this is one step further of stopping people from doing more stupid crap for Halloween. And that is going to be all that I've got for this week, so I just want to say thank you guys so much for listening to this episode of the Animation Podcast. You can find more of my work at film-book.com. All you have to do is search for Mathieu Brunet or the Animation Podcast. You can also find me on Twitter at animat505. If you have listened to this podcast on iTunes or any other podcast service, do you mind doing us a little favor and write and review this episode? That would be lovely. I would appreciate that very well. And if you are listening to this podcast on YouTube, then hit that little like button and leave us a little comment on your thoughts on the news this week. Tune in next week for the latest episode of the Animation Podcast and all things animation. Thank you guys so much for listening, and until next week, see you later, dudes.